The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Diane Edelman for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Reader's Digest. Today's program is supported by the Durham Lions Club. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and also from the Saturday Evening Post. We'll begin with a light piece from the Reader's Digest Department of Wit. Dear Pet Sitter, The Most Eccentric Care Instructions Indulged by Judith Newman from the New York Times. When I left my golden retriever, Monty, with a pet sitter, I thought my 4 pages of single-spaced instructions were perfectly reasonable. He thinks his real name is, "What do you have in your mouth?" I wrote. So please check frequently, or you will end up spending the night with Monty in the ER. There's something about writing out pet care instructions that shows just how much these animals rule our lives. During his long life, Monty racked up thousands in medical bills because of his passion for eating my underwear, which meant I had to be very explicit in the directions I gave his caretakers. This, it turns out, is surprisingly common. When I was a kid, my parents would drop me off at the babysitter, and their instructions were like, "Make sure she stays alive," says Fei-Fei Friedman, a graphic designer and dog sitter in Manhattan. But dog owners today, their instructions are as complicated as a Tesla owner's manual. In Reddit communities and on TikTok accounts, pet sitters often swap stories of over-the-top care instructions for animals, like dogs that need to hear Frank Sinatra to poop, or kittens that attack if their food isn't microwaved. "My boy will not get out of bed in the morning unless you say, 'Good morning, Mr. President,'" reads one post. "He needs his green monkey to sleep," reads another. "Don't be afraid if he keeps the tail down his throat for more than a minute. He knows what he's doing." "Do not say Jake Gyllenhaal or she will start freaking out," reads a third. Kai Cash, a pet sitter in Orlando, Florida, was once warned to keep the knives locked up, or the cat she was watching might pick up one of them in its mouth and try to stab her. "I laughed," she says. "Guess what happened?" Cash assured me in an email that the cat had dropped the knife before there were any casualties. While these stories may seem outrageous, there are perfectly logical reasons why owners explain and over-explain instructions for their pets, says Nancy R.G., the director of the Center for Human-Animal Interaction at Virginia Commonwealth University. For one thing, she says, animals can't entirely grasp the concept of time, which can make a simple trip to the store feel like abandonment. "You can explain to a young child that you are leaving and coming back," says Jane Greer, a family therapist in New Jersey who runs an Instagram account for her Coton de Tulière rally. "But with a dog, they don't know." That may explain why guilt-ridden pet owners leave long lists of what Reddit pet sitters call enrichments to distract from the owner's absence, whether it's a T-shirt that smells like the owner or favorite music and TV shows that must be played on repeat. Brenda, the accountant, has a screen addiction. Rennie Weller, a jewelry designer in Los Angeles, says of her Maltipoo, "She tells sitters her dog needs plenty of TV time and instructs them to go to YouTube, search dog videos, and give Brenda hours of squirrels." According to a 2023 Pew Research Center study, 51% of U.S. pet owners say their pets are as much a part of the family as any human member. And, she says, when people are asked to name those they trust most, pets will often be closer in their inner circle than family and friends. Many pet owners also feel a strong sense of emotional debt to their animals, adds Greer. Human relationships are very tough, she says. Your pet may be the one non-judgmental being in your life. They'll love you even if you're not a very good person. Maybe that's the reason we indulge our pets' eccentricities and fears, no matter how absurd. Carol Mithers used to leave excruciatingly detailed instructions about her scrappy chow mix, Casey, including this warning. If you see or hear the Goodyear blimp, grab the leash tightly and get home as fast as you can. Casey was terrified of blimps. Once I had to literally lie on top of him to keep him from running into a busy street, says Mithers, who is the author of Rethinking Rescue, Dog Lady, and the Story of America's Forgotten People and Pets. Rational or not, elaborate pet instructions are clearly a projection of our love, Jeeves says. We owe our pets and adore them, even when they are diabolical. That perhaps accounts for one ominous instruction left for a pet sitter who later shared it on TikTok. Jasper cannot be trusted. Good luck. And now, also from Reader's Digest, News from the World of Medicine by Christine Gaspar. Sharp memory. A study in the journal Neurology found that eating cheese could play a role in dementia prevention. A team of researchers from Sweden's Lund University found that among nearly 28,000 Swedish residents over a 25-year period, more than 3,200 ultimately developed dementia. However, those who reported eating 1.7 ounces or more per day of high-fat cheese, defined as having more than 20% fat, such as cheddar, brie, and gouda, were 13% less likely to develop dementia than those who ate half an ounce or less daily. The protective association appeared strongest for people without a gene variant called APOE4, a genetic risk factor for dementia. In contrast, low-fat dairy showed no meaningful link to lower dementia risk. Shot at prevention. Only a handful of cancer types are currently preventable by a vaccine, and an aggressive breast cancer may soon be joining them. Anixa Biosciences announced in November 2025 that it had secured a patent for a vaccine that trains the immune system to attack alpha-lactalbumin, a protein typically present during late pregnancy and lactation, and also expressed in the majority of triple-negative breast cancer cases. The idea was first developed at the Cleveland Clinic, where phase one of the trial is projected to be completed this summer. If additional trials confirm its efficacy, the vaccine could be available by 2030, with priority given to those with genetic dispositions. Power Trio. Falling is now the leading cause of injury-related deaths among adults 65 and older, a result of muscle loss that begins around age 50. But a study by sports science researchers in China has shown a promising way to counteract natural declines. After analyzing studies involving more than 7,500 participants, the team determined that resistance and balance training effectively preserved muscle for everyday functional movement, like rising swiftly from a chair. Meanwhile, the resistance training plus protein supplementation led to the largest increases in strength and muscle mass. And combining all three, resistance training, balance training, and protein, led to the largest improvements in other measures of functional health, such as grip strength, gait speed, and skeletal muscle index. Craving connection. Keeping a seat at the table for friends or family can improve key markers of healthy aging, while eating alone showed the opposite effect. After reviewing data collected across 10 countries, Australian nutrition researchers determined that those who routinely ate alone consumed less food, specifically fewer fruits and vegetables and less protein. Part of the research suggested that those who consistently ate alone were more than twice as likely to drop significant weight, a risk factor widely linked to higher rates of chronic illness and increased mortality in seniors. Cooking for and eating with others naturally encourages better habits, the team theorized, because social cues can be beneficial in facilitating eating behaviors. I, that's E-Y-E, got rhythm. Dancing, swaying, or finger tapping to music is a common voluntary response that speaks to the power of sound to move us. But a recent study published in the journal PLOS Biology showed that our brains may be involuntarily syncing to the beat as well. Researchers at the Chinese Academy of Sciences played classical music to 123 non-musicians and measured their spontaneous blinks, the ones our eyes perform without our awareness. The team found that the participants blinking involuntarily fell in line with the beat. The effect may highlight how the brain processes, predicts, and adapts to sonic patterns in the environment, even when we're unaware. And now an article from the Saturday Evening Post, Wood Works. At the Mark Adams School of Woodworking, students learn the techniques to transform ordinary furniture into generational heirlooms, one Band-Aid at a time, by Robert Annis. My dad was an amazing woodworker, but an admittedly poor teacher. After he passed, I inherited many of his tools and foolishly sold more of them. In the years since, I've gotten more serious about my carpentry hobby, but have relied on YouTube videos for guidance, with mixed amounts of success. Luckily, I discovered an alternative practically in my backyard. About 40 minutes south of Indianapolis lies a small campus of mostly interconnected buildings surrounded by cornfields. It doesn't look out of the ordinary, save for the large sign on the side of a building touting the Mark Adams School of Woodworking. The surrounding parking lot is packed and filled with license plates from all over the U.S., New Mexico, California, Washington, Illinois, Michigan, and more. On Monday morning, I walked into my classroom for the week. The room was about 40 yards long, with two rows of 10 benches on either side. Fluorescent lights shone down. In an even larger adjacent room stood more power tools than I'd ever laid eyes on in one space. Rows of bandsaws, sanders, drill presses, routers, and more. It was enough to make Bob Villa envious. At the front of the classroom was another workbench, a row of folding chairs in the front, and a chalkboard behind. At the chalkboard stood the man himself, Mark Adams. Adams is wisp-thin and balding, wearing glasses and Hoka running shoes. He looks like a stereotypical college professor, and in reality, that's not far from the truth. He has a master's degree in education. He's taught woodworking skills across the U.S. and the world, writing multiple acclaimed books and magazine articles. The joinery class I was taking would feel like a PhD-level woodworking course, while I'd barely earned a metaphoric GED. My goal with our classes has never been to teach someone how to make a specific item, Adam says. We're teaching technique that over the course of a week can transform your skill set as a woodworker. Watching woodworking videos on YouTube, Adams continued, you not only don't know the credibility of the person teaching, but you're also missing the personal interaction with the instructor. We can give you immediate feedback, and so can the other students in the workshop. Despite Adams' somewhat stern headmaster vibe, that couldn't be more different than his actual personality. He has a very wry sense of humor and radiates positivity, like a nuclear reactor emitting unicorns and puppy dogs. When a student asked a question about a half-lap joint, he burst out into a massive grin and began excitedly sketching it out on the blackboard. Adams' joinery class is one of his namesake school's most popular courses. He estimates he's taught thousands of woodworkers how to create half-blind dovetails, angled mortise and tenons, and splined miter joints. The goal, he says, is to learn techniques that will transform what might be a regular piece of furniture into a detail-laden heirloom piece that will be handed down from generation to generation. Although my wife and I don't have kids, the first time Dee met my family, She rightfully determined that my genes shouldn't be passed on. I'd love for my projects to be fought over by my extended family and friends. Whether I was actually up for the challenge was another story. Classes were slated to begin each day at 8 a.m. After arriving late on Monday, I was determined to be the first one in class the next morning. Arriving at 7:30 Tuesday morning, the class was already abuzz with activity. Most of my classmates were sharpening their chisels, cutting practice dovetails, or otherwise elbow deep in wood chips. The pace of the class could be charitably described as breakneck. A typical day began with Adams demonstrating a joinery technique, such as a sliding dovetail, with us oohing and aahing, and then trying to copy it for about an hour with varying degrees of success. Repeat ad nauseam. Our first task was creating a simple dovetail, basically cutting the ends of the wood boards at tight angles so they fit together like jigsaw pieces. The goal is for the dovetails to be so close-fitting that the boards can actually stick together with no glue or screws. Precision is key. Cut them too tight, you can't attach the pieces. Cut them too loose, they won't hold together and will look sloppy when glued together. My pieces had gaps the size of Rhode Island. I'd never done chisel work before, and it showed. Between my natural impatience and the cheap Amazon tools I'd bought the week before, I was taking off thick chunks and not thin slices, as we were taught. It doesn't matter your skill level, Adams says, seemingly seeing the flop sweat on my brow at the end of the first day. Work at your own speed. The only thing that matters is being able to put things together at the end. Adam's assistants, all master woodworkers themselves, stalk the aisles, silently observing our work and offering tips if they see students struggling. I have no issues admitting I struggled. Several of my more experienced classmates were producing practice joints that looked nearly professional, while my work looked like a kindergartner on a sugar bender had discovered a saw for the first time. Because the nearest restaurant was a gas station serving hot dogs on rollers, the school has its own cafeteria. It was another throwback to the past, standing in line, grabbing a tray, taking the pre-plated meal, protein, starchy side, vegetable, and going to sit at a table with your new friends. It was just like middle school, except we didn't exchange slap bracelets or mixtapes between bites. Instead of stretching out every moment we could, gabbing at the lunch table, we all rushed back to our benches to continue working and learning. Class officially ended around 6 p.m. each day, but few of us left. The out-of-towners had no place to be other than a lonely hotel room. I was just trying to figure out how everything I worked on turned out so wrong. On Wednesday night, we had a 2-hour presentation about glue. Yes, glue. And while that might sound as fun as watching glue dry to the layperson, the conversations dragged on to nearly 9 p.m. as the enraptured stragglers tossed very specific questions at the guest speaker, like the best cross species of wood to adhese together, or the best temperature and humidity to ensure perfect bonding. It's fair to say students are obsessed. The average age of the class is between 55 and 65, Adams says, which is confirmed by the number of grunts when the class stood up from the folding chairs. Most students have highly stressful jobs, and this school is their place to get away and be with people who share their passion for creating, Adams says. At any given time, we have more doctors on our campus than our local hospital. We only had one doctor in my class, but four electrical engineers. There were a couple of retired college professors, including one who was working on a book about trench warfare in World War I. Nearly all of the students had taken multiple courses before this one. I'd done mainly machine work before this, says Chris Hoffman, a student from Chicago. Learning these hand tool skills from talented instructors in a very supportive atmosphere has been an incredible experience. I loved being able to collaborate and commiserate with the other students. It's been an overwhelming experience at times, but a fantastic one as well. Martha Llewellyn from Los Alamos, New Mexico, was a set builder for the Goodman School of Drama back in the mid to late 80s, but had gotten away from Hammers, becoming a stage electrician for traveling productions. She eventually found her way to the MSSW through a glassblowing class, and her love for building and creating was sparked anew. On her workbench, her chisels and tools are neatly mounted on a plywood holder that she built herself specifically for these classes. She attended more than 20 classes at MASW since 2019, driving 2.5 days each way to get there. For her, every class is like the first day of school. "I've taken so many courses," Llewellyn says. "There's almost always someone I know in each new class. It's so exciting to see those familiar faces. I stay in touch with some and have shared Airbnbs and hotel rooms with them. It's the most fun you can have in the middle of a cornfield in Indiana." Now retired, Llewellyn says the skills she's learned have unlocked levels of confidence she didn't know she possessed. "This school has given me the ability and courage to create my own designs and actually build them," Llewellyn says. "I can sign up for a class like this and know that I can figure out how to do joinery." This year, MASW will offer more than 270 different classes, typically up to 6 a week. For beginners, Adams recommends basic woodworking or cabinet building classes, as well as courses on hand skills and, yes, joinery. In addition to woodworking, the school has a wealth of other classes, like glassblowing, blacksmithing, and even the science of chocolate. Adams' plan for the school's future includes lodging for students, additional culinary classes, and courses in gardening. Adam admits that in 35 years or so of teaching, he has seen a handful of students who he felt may do much better in photography. "As a professional photographer myself, I tried not to be offended." Adams is taking a step back this year, handing off the day-to-day aspects of running the school to one of the instructors so that he can do something he's never done before, take a class himself. "I'm always getting pulled away," Adams says. "I'll be listening in on a class when someone tells me, 'Mark, the toilet's backed up.' I'll still be involved with what's happening at the school, but now I can hopefully take some time and learn myself." On Thursday, we had our big challenge. Inside a manila envelope we picked at random was a joint that we hadn't covered yet in the class. We had 2 hours to recreate it with absolutely no help from any of the instructors. I was tasked with creating a bridle joint, 2 interlocking pieces of wood, with the secondary piece askew. Imagine a diamond superimposed over a rectangle, with the top and the bottom of the diamond sticking out. Luckily, the solution was pretty easy to envision, but the execution was a different story. I spent the first 20 minutes trying to figure out a jig that would allow me to save time using the bandsaw to make my cuts. Then I decided the quickest time saver would be to cut out the middle with a handsaw, then chisel out the excess. It took me 15 minutes, less time than I took trying to figure out an easier way to do the cut. I was able to quickly cut out the mating top piece with the bandsaw, then spent the rest of my time trying to friction fit them together. The end result wasn't the prettiest, but I was happy with it. Presenting it to the class, I felt a sense of accomplishment, like I'd actually proven that I'd learned something during the week. As the week progressed and chisels slipped, I saw more and more band-aids on the hands of classmates. With dozens of tiny slices from my chisel work, my index finger looked as if I'd spent the last 5 days working in a petting zoo for feral cats. But I also noticed a confidence among us all that was lacking Monday, and that included me. I was far from the best student in the class, but I was still miles ahead of where I had been just a week earlier. I learned so much from Adams and the other instructors that I'm considering taking another class to further improve my skills. I may not be ready to build a Sam Maloaf-inspired rocking chair yet. Shout out to all the woodworkers reading this and nodding their heads. But friends and family can probably expect to receive a nicely dovetailed box this holiday season, assuming I keep practicing. That was Woodwork by Robert Annis in the Saturday Evening Post. Robert Annis is an award-winning outdoor travel journalist and certified bear guide, with work appearing in National Geographic, Outside, Sierra, Men's Journal, and the Chicago Tribune. And now to finish things off, a few small pieces from Laughter, the Best Medicine, Reader's Digest. A fisherman shouted out to a man wading in the water, "Can I rent a boat on this lake?" "Yes," the waiter yelled back. "They're $10 or $25 an hour." "Would you recommend the $10 boat?" "Absolutely not. I'm standing in one." Submitted by Gene Newman from Parsippany, New Jersey. My husband got stung on his forehead by a bee. He's in the ER now, his face swollen and bruised. He almost died. Luckily, I was close enough to hit the bee with my shovel. From the podcast, How to Kill an Hour. After visiting her husband in prison, a woman stopped a correctional officer and laid into him. "You shouldn't make my husband work so hard," she said. "He's exhausted." The officer laughed. "Work? He doesn't do anything but eat, sleep, and sit in his cell." "Well, that's strange," said the woman. "He told me he's been digging a tunnel for months." Submitted by David Mitef from Lafayette, Indiana. So we now have run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest. Today's program is supported by the Durham Lions Club. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Diane Edelman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Reader's Digest is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.